Welcome to Star Wheelers On Call. I'm Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I'm on SWP Online, Fed, Come Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone to dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk's website at www.talkshow.com. Search for call ID 17702. Or if you want the best online experience, what you want to go to is twitch.tv. That's twitch.tv/SFU on call. And you will find us there. Find the chat room and I'll say hi. And hopefully we'll have a lot of people to join you and you have a great conversation. Only one way to find out, isn't there? And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you'll follow me on the Twitter/X/whatever it is this week. You can follow me on sfuoncall, or you can also follow my personal account, which is Paul Franz, PAULFRANZ. There's no T in that. And also, if you want to follow my business account, there's Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, it's Love the Talk Cast, gets into podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick A to B news from this week. Steve Cole is still busy. He finished up the actual artwork last week. And Steve Patrick is still working on Module K and the Orion Master Starship book. This week, when found on the online store, we have GURPS Prime Directive 2020. This is $49.95. GURPS Prime Directive 4E Revised Volume 1 and 2. The most economical way to get all the information you need to use GURPS to role-play Starfleet Universe instead of both volumes. Long in coming, GURPS Prime Directive 4E has been revised. This massive set has everything you need to play the Starfleet Universe. Powered by GURPS, this book includes information about species inhabiting the Alpha Octant of the Milky Way, including normal height and weight ranges. Information about the species of the interstellar Concordium has been greatly expanded from the original edition. Academy templates are included for the characters and who are part of the Federation. Also expanded are the list of advantages, disadvantages, and skills found in GURPS. We have chosen the ones we feel are best suited for the Starfleet Universe and think you can play just these. However, more are included in the GURPS basic set. Characters, when you reference one of these advantages or disadvantages or skills, it will clearly be marked. These are mostly references to magic and supernatural, which were omitted, are not germane to the Starfleet Universe, which makes complete and utter sense because in Starfleet Universe there is no magic. It's technological, there's no magic involved. Even though, you know, the saying goes, you know, high tech, low technology is hard to distinguish from magic. Gets me thinking about that one book. I'll let it go. Moving forward, we have, of course, the SFU Online Tournament. That's the Sapphire Start 17 Tournament. Signups are open. We have 9 of the 16 slots are currently filled. So we only have 7 slots available. After the 7 slots are filled, the game starts. And if you want to sign up, too late. Moving on, we're forward to the library report. We got some fixes when it comes to the Hydrant, the Carnivons, this past week. Other than that, it's been pretty quiet. And also when it comes to the FedCom library, there has been no updates there. So with that is the news for this week. It's me, the one Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Gary. Say hi, Gary.
Hi, Gary. happy Blue Jay City Connect jersey hat uniform reveal day.
Okay. Actually, for those not here, Gary and I were talking about the Toronto's City Connect jersey, which is actually kind of cool, and because I'm into MLB and all that kind of thing. But you know, this discussion, they're pretty cool actually. Kind of, they call it dark mode. So, I agree, it's kind of interesting and different take on a jersey, you know, because usually the jerseys are brighter, though I know with Baltimore, it's a plain black jersey with Baltimore on the front. I don't think it's anything like a city skyline or anything like that, but you know, but anyway, that's why that comment came in. But anyway, moving on and forward, Gary, you said a topic of involves F&E. Pray tell, what is
so,
it?
So basically, just before I get into the actual topic itself, it's another F&E related thing. Is ADB are in the process. I think I might have mentioned this, something like this in the past. Is that in recent years, reprints have been done of the counter sheets for F&E. They basically switched to a new format that allows them to fit a few dozen more counters onto each sheet.
Right.
So right now on the BBS, there are three active topics. For Kilo, Sierra, and Volcan, I think. Volcan with a K, not the other Volcan. And basically, some space has been emptied because some of the old counters are redundant because they're in other products. And some of them are opened up because the way, as I say, it's being jumped to the new counter amount. So people have been posting over the last few days in each thread requests basically to fill some of those counter sheet spaces with new ships or new support units or whatever. So, for example, I've been requesting, because in module R12, the Romulans were given a heavy war cruiser called the Griffin Hawk. And the Griffin Hawk is modular, the same as the Spiral Hawk. So that means that in F&E terms, you can create a counter to represent each configuration. So I've been asking for some of the specific configurations that don't already have a counter to be given counters now. So we'll have to see. A few of them have actually been approved, so thanks to ADB for that. But I'll have to see if any others make it in between now and print. So basically, if anyone's listening and they want to pop over to that portion of the BBS and add their own thoughts in terms of any particular ship or units for the empires that are featured on those counter sheets that they want to ask for, then now's the time. So just bear in mind though that because the color blocks are set in a certain way, check to see, make sure, because if the empire that the ship you want needs a certain color on the back, like red or white or black or whatever, just make sure that all those color blocks aren't already full up, because if they're full, then you're out of luck. But if there's still a few that are empty, then you could put the request forward and see what happens.
Okay, that sounds like something you have to keep in mind, because I'm sure they have they don't want to have like individual blocks of different colors, because that's impossible to make sure that it kind of turns out right. Better have a block, like a block of Federation counters or a block of Klingon counters, you know. So the large portion of the counter sheet, they're all the same color, and therefore you have less worry about it being exact when it comes to the cutting.
Well, if you have your web browser up for the video portion of tonight's episode, I would suggest actually go to one of those threads on the VBS just to so people can see the most recent work in progress. So, for example, there's the one for strategic operations, Countersuit Sierra. That one was actually just updated a couple hours ago. So people can actually get a look and see a sample of what the work in progress is. Now, basically, the way it's being done is that you don't have to have an entire column or row in the same color. Some of them are broken up, but I guess there's probably because they want to make sure that it still looks quasi-presentable, because if it was a complete hodgepodge of colors, that might be problematic. So, but even so, if anyone wants to have a rough example of what it is that they're looking at, and also bear in mind, at this stage, the counters are basically the uncrippled side. Because as you know, for many units in Federation and Empire, the front of the counter is when it's uncrippled, and then you flip it over and you've got the reduced factors for when it's crippled. So what I think usually what they do is that they finalize the uncrippled side first, and then they create the uncrippled side to match afterwards, because there's no point doing twice the work now. It's better to save that work until later. So.
Okay, where's the counter sheets?
So if you're on the VBS, just click Federation of Empire.
Okay.
Then click F&E Input.
Okay.
Then click near the bottom, you'll see Counter Sheet Projects.
Okay.
And then the very last one, because I see there's three of them that are ongoing right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the one I was just referring to, click on the one that says, sorry, I'm just trying to...
Sierra.
Yeah, the one that says F&E Strategic Ops Sierra.
Mm-hmm.
And then scroll down near the bottom and you'll see the today's revised sheet.
Okay, we've got the update for today. Yeah, it looks like there's some slots for Hydran, Zinti, Gorn. Okay, it took me a moment. Maybe? I think this one's available right here, which would be Laren. Three Tholian and four Romulan, looks like. Possibly five?
Yeah, Tholian is the white text on red, and then Romulan is black text on red.
Yep.
Now, one thing you might notice on the counters is that some of them have a diamond, but sometimes the diamond is white, and other times the diamond is black. The difference there is that, well, for the Romulan entity, whichever the standard color is, the diamond, that refers to a scout ship. But the diamond that's in the reverse color is a survey ship, because strategic operations has specific rules about different types of survey machines you can send the ships on. So, technically speaking, some of the Romulan, even if the SFD is the same. So, for example, if you have the Romulan Sparrowhawk C, it also represents the Sparrowhawk S, because the C is when you use the ship as a heavy scout, and the S is when you use it as a survey cruiser.
Understood. Yeah, there they are. I'm looking at the Hydran. SRG, the PGR, SR, and the SRV. There's a few more, too. Huh. Looks like some action chits. Possibly? You got them. Four of them which say Raid on them. You got Nova, Pulsar. I'm assuming Pulsar, Dragon, and Jug. meaning Juggernaut. At least that's what I would think it refers to.
Those are just placeholder ones. So
Oh, okay.
I assume that by the end of this thing, they won't be there. Although
Oh,
the
okay.
message on one of those counters is quite important. So anyone who looks at counter B20, they should take that lesson to heart.
We got vote. I'm assuming that's like a stay.
Okay, so now while you're on the BBS, the topic I wanted to bring up for tonight is also in the F&E section. So if you go back up to inputs, and click on scenario proposals,
Okay. Reflected
and then the one at
wins.
the bottom, reflected wins.
Big surprise. The
Now, just
topic
to
you
be clear,
started.
wind is a term that's often used for headlines for different F&E scenarios. So it's something to do with what you might need to tackle this model. So.
Understood. Oh, jeez. Yeah, I just realized what module R4J was.
Yeah, so do you have module R4J yet or no?
Yes, I did, and actually, I read through it, which was very interesting. I
Okay,
think it was the
so
alternate histories of the of possible Romulan histories.
yeah, this scenario proposal is based on one of the alternate timelines that's offered in Module R4J. So this thread is intended to try to think about what that particular timeline would look like in terms of trying to create an F&E scenario. So there's a lot to, I guess there's a lot to I've already posted about it, but I guess we
There's
could go
a
through it
lot
in
here.
smaller chunks if you like.
I think that'd be a good idea. Because I'm a slow reader, for
Yeah,
one
so
thing.
I guess just to give, so I guess just to give an introduction, the third timeline that's offered in R4J is the reflection universe. Now, I don't believe ABB is allowed to use the mirror universe that you see in the franchise, like the
Right.
Shadow Empire stuff, that's off limits. But in any case, this universe has a different separation point. So in this universe, the change actually happens at Vulcan. So
Right.
when Thorak was beginning his mission to kind of, change Vulcan society, in this universe, he died early, so they never gained a critical mass of followers. But there were enough of them so that when the Exodus happened to go to Romulus, the logical Vulcans were the ones who left, and the ones who were more warlike were the ones who stayed on Vulcan. So on the one hand, you end up with the quote-unquote logical armaments who still build the same ships. They don't build old Vulcan ships, but they're more peaceful. Like, they're not trying to conquer the galaxy or anything. But the Vulcans still at home, they eventually try to influence the other home planets, like Earth and Andoria and stuff.
Right.
But it doesn't work out the way they think it does, because humans decide to offer the creation of a thing called the Senegal Imperium, where the various planets are like co-members, but they agree to share the spoils and conquest between them. So Vulcan is still a part of it, but they're not as dominant as they would like initially.
Yeah, because that was the one where, yeah, basically the Federation turned evil, kind of, because they didn't have the wise words of the Vulcans to keep them from actually turning evil, basically. So the Federation becomes more warlike. Than in the actual general war in history.
Yeah, so in this universe, the Federal Imperium, it has a bigger fleet than Starfleet has historically, but it also, so for example, you know how, like, ordinarily the Feds don't use gunboats because well, the story they gave is that they weren't too keen on the idea of how many people were on board these gunboats, and they basically die every time one of them got destroyed. But the Federal Imperium side of things, they're like, who cares? So they never deploy the third wave, so no F-111s for them. But they do get gunboats as soon as they're available.
Understood. So, damn it, I forget what it was said about the Federal Imperium and how it modified the history, if at all, when it comes to the general war and things like that. Isn't this is one of the history, alternate histories, where the warlike Vulcans come to find out where the peaceful Vulcans, i.e. Romulus and Remus, end up, and they want to actually kill them? Or am I remembering that wrong?
Well, in this universe, there are a number of wars between the Logical Armament and the Federal Imperium, and usually the Imperium is the one that starts it. And on the other side, so the idea here is to basically, like, in F&E terms, is to try to think about what an F&E scenario would look like, because in the timeline that's in Modular 4J, basically what happens is the war begins the way you think it historically did, in the sense that the Valyrians attack the Klingons, and then the Klingons jump in. But as soon as they do that, in this timeline, the Federal Imperium invades both the Klingons and the Klingons.
That's a bit ambitious.
What was it, Doug?
That's a bit ambitious.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And that's one thing.
The problem with an F&E context is that the rules in F&E aren't really that great for multiplayer, multi-faction. Okay, so you can play F&E with many players, but usually, if you're playing the General War or the Four Powers War, you've got, like, the Alliance players and the Coalition players. Or if you're playing the IFC war, the IFC pacification, you've got one or more players who's the IFC, and everyone else plays one of the empires being pacified. So it's still not quite, you know, three or four player, you know, three or four sided conflicts, if that makes sense. So, but the problem is that the way that the scenario is written in Modular 4J is that, so for example, if you're the Xintis, you're still being attacked by the Lyrans, who are technically quote unquote coalition. But on the other side, you're being attacked by the Federal Imperium, who are attacking you at the same time they're attacking the Klingons, who are still allied to the Lyrans. So how do you work out turn order? And how do you work out, basically, how do you manage those kind of complicated versions of events? So now, one way I'm thinking of dealing with that is there's a scenario in Captain's Log 38 called Altered Alliances. And in that timeline, there's the Four Powers War, but it's actually the coalition is not Kzinti, it's not Klingon and Lyran, it's Klingon and Kzinti. So in that timeline, you're basically playing as the coalition, the Klingons and Kzinti, or you're playing as the alliance, which is the Lyrans and the Hydrans. So if you do like a, I guess you could call it Alt-3A, so it's like a slight modification of the R4GA timeline. But if you make it Altered Alliances in the sense that you basically say that the Kzintis and Klingons were allied anyway because of the threat of the Federal Imperium, then it makes it a lot easier in FD terms because you can basically have the coalition be Kzinti, Klingon, Logik, Romulan, and Gorn, and then you can have the quote-unquote alliance be Hydran, Lyran, and Federal Imperium.
Understood, but I wouldn't think. I don't know the Athenian rules very well. I know some briefly basic rules on how things work. But my understanding from Athenian is that Athenian doesn't have an issue with multi-faction. As in more than two wars, you know, scenarios. The only difficulty is if there is an actual battle with more than two sides. That's a problem. But outside that, I didn't think the FNE rules had an issue with more than one side. You know, more than having more than two sides.
So there is a quote-unquote free campaign that you can set up in FNE, but even it is not necessarily great at handling more than two factions, or more than two alliances at once. Like if you start basically having, you know, three or four way battles, then things start getting squirrely. So, I mean, in theory, those kind of rules could be introduced in the future, because, like, for example, if you ever did if ADB ever found a gold mine and was able to justify spending money on creating an Omega version of FNE, then in theory you'd need those kind of rules to be able to make some of the more complicated wars of Omega work. But in Alpha, it does tend to be a little bit simpler in the sense that you've got an alliance, quote unquote, or you've got a coalition, and so the rules were really written, and most of the historical or even non-historical scenarios are written that way. So, which is why, in this particular instance, I think that in terms of actually how you play turn to turn, I think it would be easier to do the altered one where you swap the Kzintis and Lyrans in terms of which side they're on. But that doesn't say that it wouldn't be interesting to follow the reflection timeline as written, where you do have that more complicated set of who's shooting who.
Understood. And actually, you got a good point when it comes to the Omegas. I'm sure you will agree that I don't think any of you will ever get around to actually working on an FNE game based on the Omega Octant. I think there's, well, yeah, I think there's definitely...
They want to make like, sell 3 copies of it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the problem.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, that's the whole issue, is that it's not profitable enough. It wouldn't be profitable for all the hard work that would be required to implement such a rule set because of the complications which happen in the Omega Octant. As it is, the General War, I think, is one of the most well-studied. I was going to say war in the Starfleet universe, and how the productions of the different ships, the supposed schedule of the ships, and how they work to have to provide a balanced game. And I think that'd be much harder with Omega, and as Gary pointed out, which is the whole issue with definitely, you know, more than 2 factions fighting at the same time, which not many alliances between the sides. So,
totally free form, everybody's for themselves. There you go.
Well, that's the whole, I think, the campaign, I think it is, or scenario, I forget which, I think it's campaign, which was for FNE, I think it's called New Beginnings. I think that what it's called.
Early Beginnings. So,
yeah, because I saw them playing, it was FNE, but it was not using the FNE map. They actually had a little thing, was it circular? It's been a while since I actually entered the FNE room at Origins where they were playing it.
Oh god, that was so long ago.
I know. Which is why I said that, you know.
Because what they try to do nowadays is once a year they try to hold a thing called StratCon. I think one year, right. At least one year, it was in Amarillo, but sometimes it's other places. But usually what they try to do is they try to have more and more FNE games going at StratCon. And also they try to use StratCon as a way to get the staff together and basically, you know, do some in-person work on trying to update various modules or work on new ones and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forget what they're located. I think it's somebody's house. Most of it's located. I forget. It's been a while since the last one. I know they did do some mentionings of it on the discussion board, but it's been a while since they had the StratCon. Might have been a local hotel.
They are welcome to come to Gamers of Winter and Gamers of Summer.
I know. I know.
Just saying.
But,
Money's pace. So,
there's like a dump.
Was that Gary?
So, I was just going to say, one of the challenges, well, there's many challenges in terms of how to make this kind of scenario work. And one of them is actually the Federal Imperium itself, because if you start with the idea that they're aggressive, because basically at the height of the escalation, they're fighting 4 empires at once. They're fighting the Vintis, they're fighting the Klingons, they're fighting the Logical Romulans, and they're fighting the Gorns. So they're going to need a big fleet, but they're also going to need some sort of balancing factor, because like the way the Federation is historically is that their peacetime fleet is maybe not as big as it should be, but because of the strength of their economy, they can produce, if they survive the early turns of the war long enough, they can produce enough ships to build more than the coalition can destroy. So I guess it's kind of like how when Pearl Harbor happened, the U.S. was relatively, like, the armed forces weren't that strong compared to what their potential. But then when the U.S. switched to a wartime economy, it suddenly was able to outproduce the Axis and help support the other allies as well. So that's pretty much what's happening here too. But with the Federal Imperium, because they're already the aggressors and they are said to have a lower standard of living because of it, then there's got to be something that you take away from them so that they're not too cheesy, and that they're, it's appropriate in terms of the strength that they have, but also how that strength waxes and wanes over the course of a campaign.
Well, you could just put them on war economy setting already. Instead of, like, starting it up, they could be suffering from it. I mean, nothing lasts forever.
Well, one thought... because one thought I had is in regular F&E, there's rules for economic exhaustion. And most empires, they hit about 15 turns before the exhaustion kicks in. But the historical Federation gets 20 turns because of the strength of the peacetime economy that they're able to transition over. But for these guys, I would suggest reduce it down to 15 again. So they don't have that extra fat, so to speak, in the economy that they can trim to plow into the war effort, because they're already overspending compared to the Federation with the fleet that they'll have. So then that's basically one side of it, but then you also have to ask yourself, so how much bigger does Starfleet need to be for the Federal Imperium to allow them to really, make a dent against their various enemies historically? Just enough of a dent to be quote unquote balanced. So.
Oh, understood. But I definitely would think that a Federal Imperium would have an issue because I guess this comes down to my own philosophy, and thoughts on economics. And that is the reason why the Federation could go 20 years before it has wartime exhaustion. I think that's a term. Is because of the free market economy that the Federation employs to allow a lot more commerce to occur, versus with the Imperium, I think it would be a little more controlled and constrained, because if the Imperium, they want to control more things, and therefore commerce wouldn't be as free, and therefore when it comes to economics, the Federation imprint will not be quite as rich as the Federation of Planets is, with the regular timeline.
Oh yeah, that would be that makes perfect sense. You could put them on that kind of a restriction, mm-hmm. And the other side of that is that if they're in a constant state of war, practical for all practical intents and purposes, you might even cut it down more, like 10 turns instead of 15.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fairness, even the Klingons get 15, and they're kind of they've got a lot of wars going on, so I'd say, well, the Klingon economy is probably even worse than the Federal Imperium war would be, but I think. I don't think they'd be any worse than the Klingon Empire would be in that sense.
Makes me wonder if the Federal Imperium might, at some point, just to, in this scenario, that the Federation Imperium would at some point basically have signed a treaty with some of the people, some of the empires they've been warring with, just for the plain simple reason that economically they can't keep it up. And they'll just say, you know, we'll stop fighting you. You can, as long as you don't attack us, we'll leave you alone. You know, and we're good. You know, the whole idea being, you know, that they get an economic benefit because they don't have to worry about one more border to protect and actually have and start and keep losing ships and so forth. Well, they can just set up, let's see, kind of, I forgot the word I was looking for. A detente. That's the word I was looking for, detente. Between the two empires. And have it so, yo, we fought it long enough. We're good. We can probably keep this up, but, you know, we're gonna be magnanimous and we're not going to attack me anymore. As long as you don't attack us, we're good.
Yeah, like an armistice.
Right. Exactly. An armistice. North Korea. Yeah, that's a
North
better
Korea,
word.
South Korea. Yeah.
Because that's the only way I could think they could keep going
now, one other thing
economically. Yes, Gary.
Now, one other thing to stick with the Federal Imperium a little bit longer is if you ever see the Ethne map, you notice that the Orion province is marked separately from the rest of the Federation.
Right.
That's because in the historical timeline, the Orions have various bespoke membership agreements. So there's actually a point during the General War where they declare neutrality. And they only get brought back into the Federation once the Feds recapture all the hexes surrounding the Orion Enclave. But in this timeline, that doesn't happen because the Orions join the Federation, the Federal Imperium. They join as normal members. So there is no Orion Enclave. They're just the same as other Imperium planets. So that also means that there's no quote-unquote Orion pirates. What you actually have are Caravian pirates. So I think they still use the same cartel zones, but they don't call them cartels. And they still use the same Orion ships. They don't use Caravian ships. But no matter which operating zone they're in, they still get access to quantum light torpedoes and phaser bombs. So that's more of an SFB thing. But in F&E terms, because there are ways to represent like Orion pirate attacks, but I think there's also mercenary rules. So the question would be, though, is because the Orions, you know, historically, they'll be mercenaries for anybody. But in this timeline, if it's actually Paravians on board these ships, they wouldn't necessarily contract to like a living species like the Gorns, because they still want to kill the Gorns. So it might be that you have to be more particular in terms of which empires are permitted to recruit Paravian mercenaries and which ones are not. So that itself could be a bit of a balance factor in terms of how you want to finesse the campaign so that you end up with a quote-unquote status quo in my way of life. So.
True. Yeah, the whole thing with the Orions definitely changes things a little bit with the Federal Imperium. Okay, because the Orions never become actually pirates, and so they never create their own ships, correct?
Well, they'd have their own, planetary fleet, but when the Unified Navy comes around, they just take part in that. So they never mutiny, and they never create the pirate cut the way that they did historically. But there is a group of exiles from some of the planets in the Federal Imperium. They actually cross the border into Romulan space, and there's one of the planets that it's actually an Orion planet in the historical timeline, but in this timeline, it becomes a Rigelian planet. So basically a lot of the more kind of peaceful-minded citizens that had been in the Federal Imperium, they flee there, and they have kind of protected status under the Romulans. So they're basically, I guess, helping to prop up the Romulan economy against the Federal Imperium. So.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
But, yeah, actually, then, of course, well, there's the whole thing about the Romulans themselves, because they're kind of in an awkward situation, because on the one hand, of course, they've got the Federal Imperium to worry about, but they're allied with the Gorns, so they're sharing technology. So, for example, they actually give, in this timeline, they give the Gorns access to Mauler cannons. So some of the conjectural Mauler ships that the Gorns have in Module R9, they actually get access to here. But funny enough, because the Gorns aren't trying to shoot the Romulans, they never develop the plasma carronade. So they get the carronade as part of X technology, but they never develop the carronade firing mode before then. So that's not a thing. That's the thing you've seen in the year FedCon, but not in the Fed Empire. But there are a couple of interesting things when it comes to thinking about how the Romulans are going to deal with the Tholians, because in the historical timeline, the Romulans didn't really care about the Tholians. And they knew the Federation was not going to break them, but they knew the Klingons want that space back. So the most that they would do was they would basically maybe help a little bit when the Klingons invade the Tholians, trying to get rid of them. But in this timeline, the bigger threat would be if the Federal Imperium invades the Tholians, because they don't want that either. So I'm thinking that maybe their policy towards the Tholians, it actually varies depending on who's doing the invading. So if the Klingons invade, the Romulans just do nothing. They just wait and see what happens. But if the Federal Imperium invades, then maybe the Romulans allow Gorn ships to transit through Romulan space to fight on behalf of the Tholians in the whole fest. Kind of like, because historically the Federation, that's what they do. They have a transit agreement with the Kzintis and Gorns. So there are Kzinti and Gorn ships that fight in the whole fast against the Klingons. But in this timeline, they're going to have to rework that, because the Kzintis won't be involved at all. And so we're the only people who could be involved with the Gorns. So they'd have to transit to Romulan space to do it. But itself is an interesting way to think about what's happening here, because you're basically sending Gorn ships through Romulan space to help fight off the quote-unquote Fed faction.
Well, here's the thing, though. If you're flipping the Feds into enemies of the Tholians, I think the Romulans would probably just help them out directly if they're enemies of the Feds. So I don't think you'd have to shoehorn it in so that the Gorns could get down there or the Kzinni could get down there, because the Romulans would have a vested interest in the Feds not taking that, and that Imperium not taking over that particular space.
That is true, but even in the historical timeline, the Tholians don't allow the Federation to. Even in the historical timeline, the reason why the Gorns and Kzintis are sent to fight in Tholian space is because the Tholians won't allow Federation ships to fight in the Holdfast. So Federation ships, they can fight in the neutral zone hexes around the Holdfast, but they can't fight in the Holdfast proper, because the Tholians, they don't want to give the Federation any more knowledge about that territory than they have to have. So they're still paranoid about the idea that the Feds might turn on them. So basically, the Gorn and Kzinti expeditions, they're more tolerable, because when the Kzintis and Gorns go home again, they're safely far enough away that it's not an issue. So if the Tholians are as paranoid in this timeline as they are historically, which seems to be a safe bet, they're not going to want the Romulans to. They might accept the Romulans fighting in the neutral zone hexes, so that's perfectly fair. But they won't let Romulan ships into the Holdfast, so they have to get the Gorns the Romulans would have to get the Gorns to go on the similar kind of expedition set if they want to actually have ships in Holdfast space. Although it is actually kind of a shame that the Carronade doesn't exist in this universe, because of course, if you assume that the Federal Imperium is hostile to the Tholians, then the Tholians aren't going to get photon torpedoes, and they're not going to get Federation pods either. And I would definitely not want the Romulans to give plasma torpedoes to the Tholians. But carronades would have been an interesting thing, because they're a direct fire weapon, and I mean, they're useful against, you know, smaller targets like fighters and drones and stuff. But alas, they're never created by the Gorns in this timeline, so the Tholians can't get lighter. But actually, in SFB or FedCom terms, it'd be interesting to think about what kind of tactics would be involved, because there's plenty of experience that people have, you know, sending Klingons against the Tholians, but not too many people flying Fed ships against the Tholians. But in this time, if the Federal Imperium invades, then they'd get plenty of opportunity to figure that out. So it'd be interesting to think about how those different technologies would end up clashing compared to what people are used to doing.
Yeah, I agree on that. Especially given that the Federation weapons, they're the two turning on, I mean, so that in the case of, if you want to hit the Tholians every turn, you can fire all your photon torpedoes every single turn. You'd have to alternate between the two, which means that the Tholian base could definitely take not more damage. It'd be easier for them to fight, I think, the Federation than the Klingons, because the Klingons have the disruptors. And also with the disruptors, one of the benefits of the disruptors is that you can not charge or charge for a single turn, and that's it. In the case of the Federation, to fire next turn, you got to allocate energy this turn. So that even if the Federation can't fire the photons, they still can't. They still wouldn't be able to protect themselves in that scenario. Now, of course, the thing is, both the Klingons and the Federation both have quite a bit of drones. So they're kind of, even the way we play is kind of pretty much the same between those two, especially in the Federal Empire, where they have gunboats, which, just like the Klingons have gunboats. So other than, I think, the big difference, which is photons require two turns of arming, that the, you know, against the Tholians, they have a harder time, in my mind. At least when it comes to the bases, which I think is the critical thing.
No.
Well, the other thing is that the Feds have a lot more phaser ones than the Klingons.
They have crunch power. And they have a lot of it once they get through. And if you get in there with the Klingon and you've got half the crunch power. As you're going through multiple turns of fighting, you're going to lose ships to the base. Because you have it turns, and every time that you're getting your fire into it, you're basically having to, you're giving up a lot of damage. So you might take a shield down, but he's just going to rotate and get away from that. Whereas when you have a bunch of to take down that shield, and you're going to do a lot more internals to that base and make it less capable of hurting your ships. So it's the same trade-off that it's had before, but I think the Feds would actually be advantaged going in after the Tholians versus the Klingons. Their ships are a little beefier, and you know they can brick just as good as the Klingons can when you get in there for that, you know, close in fighting. But then again, that would be an interesting scenario to run at a gamers event. You know, the Federation decides to say, "Hey, Tholians, you're going to be integrated into the Empire." Yeah. Are you getting a Zenny attack there?
Yeah. Finally, let the kiddies in. We had the guest over, and so I had the door all the way closed, and that means the kiddies couldn't come in. Actually, I don't see the kitten. The kitten was in a little bit earlier. But anyway, actually, that brings up a... I was just thinking about... If the Tholians are ever conquered by the Federation Imperium, or Federal Imperium, whatever, the Imperium. One of the technology, they couldn't actually be able to use the technology because it's so far, no one else can understand or even use the webcasters. And the
well, it would leave the Romulans in an awkward position, at least, because in theory, even if the Federal Imperium does succeed in defeating the Tholians, it probably need the Klingon help to get rid of the Federal Imperium from that territory. But that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to give the territory back to the Tholians, because if the Klingons move in, they're going to want to stay there because they want to reclaim that territory.
Right.
So if there are any Tholian ships that flee into Romulan space after their conquest, they're not going to be going back, because if the Klingons are the ones who take over that territory, they're just trading one non-Tholian rule for another. So the only chance that the Tholians would have is if the Klingons are too distracted dealing with other, you know, fronts to move in against the Federal Imperium, and somehow the Romulans and maybe the Gorns too are strong enough to be able to ally with the Tholian exiles and push in, then the Romulans might decide to help the Tholians, but they might not, because, you know, I mean, they might basically, it'll basically have to be kind of a numbers game. They go like a logic debate. They have to kind of sit down and think, in the long term, is it better for us to get on the Klingons helping us to get rid of the Federal Imperium from Tholian space? Or if we can't rely on the Klingons for this, is it better to try to prop up the Tholians and put them back at the sphere? Even if it means that the prospect of the Klingons being able to do that would be much weaker. So, because ultimately they have to kind of try to make the decision that they think is best for them. And so that itself would be an interesting thing too, because their priorities are not going to be the same as what the Klingons' priorities are. So they might need each other, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be in lockstep all the time.
Yeah, that actually brings up an interesting question in my mind, which is, okay, currently the Tholians basically are a big pain to both the Klingons and the Romulans when it comes to their territory. If the Federal Imperium actually conquered the Tholians, what would happen? Because if the Tholian Imperium, I'm sorry, the Federation Imperium tries to take over the Tholian, what was previously Tholian space, there'd be like a wedge between the Klingons and Romulans. And I can't imagine that staying that like that for long.
Yeah, that's where you'd probably see them intervene. And, you know, just kind of a random thought here, but if you're looking at basically a mirror-mirror kind of universe, why not just have the Tholians be there as the special guest of the Klingons? Because, oh yeah, they're refugees, and maybe in the mirror-mirror type universe, the Klingons are more like the Feds. And, like, more tolerant of them.
Good point. The question
maybe
is,
not allied.
Yeah. Well, the question is, would they be more?
It'd be a play balance thing,
right? Oh, I understand from a game perspective that the Klingons would have to be more peaceful.
You know, the Romulans might not be the warlike species that
right.
they are in the other universe. They might be the Vulcans.
My understanding that they weren't, you know, when it comes to being overly aggressive. You know, I forget, did they actually explore more of the... I was going to say that, not the rim, but the previously unsurveyed area that's on the FNE map when it comes to the Romulans. I think they did, the peaceful ones.
Yeah, the species that are along the galactic rim, in the reflection timeline, the Romulans place protectorate status over them, but they have more personal freedoms than they do under the regular bad guy Romulans. So, actually, that's one other point I wanted to talk about with the Gorns, because in the historical timeline, the Gorns used Federation fighters, but they used mercenary pilots from the Skolians, because the Gorns are too big to fly fighters themselves.
Right.
In this timeline, the Gorns use Romulan fighters, but they'd still be too big for them. So it'd be interesting, because one of the species that gets a protectorate status, they're actually related to the Gorns. They're a lizard species called the Jerlunians. So I think it'd be interesting if, in this timeline, mercenaries from the Jerlunians are recruited to go to Gorn space and fly the Romulan-built fighters for the Gorns in lieu of the Skolians, who in this timeline would be part of the Federal Imperium instead.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. The Skolians. The other lizard-like species, race, race. I'm assuming that they're kind of more like a gecko, kind of remind where they're thin and lanky compared to the Gorn, which are really considered stock and just muscular.
And they have really good insurance plans for their ships.
There's There's a write-up on them in GURPS Romulan, if you have that PDF. There's actually a picture of them too. But yeah, they're basically, they're portrayed as being not quite as cumbersome and bulky as their Borden would be.
Ooh. Actually, I think I might actually have that.
And I wonder if that would, if they would then turn the ISC into basically like the equivalent of the Mongol horde coming in at the end. Instead of being peacekeepers, they'd be coming in to take over as much as they could.
Understood.
And okay. What they can.
So while you're doing that, Paul, just one final thing for tonight, because I guess this might be an idea for a part two with some later points. But one other thing is when it comes to the Lyrans, because in the timeline that's presented in the R4J, they're still sort of allied with the Klingons, so they'd still get Klingon fighters and pods and stuff. But if you go with the 3A option where they're enemies of the Klingons, that means that they don't get Klingon fighters and they don't get Klingon pods either. So then the question is, what fighters and pods do they use? And so one option would be to either modify Hydran products, like import them. But there's actually also another idea, because if you remember the Paladine, in Module E4 and also in Stellar Shadows, Journal 1, they actually have drone arm fighters. Because the Paladin used drones to pass them. So, in theory, you could say that in one of these timelines, the Duke of the Far Stars Duchy, maybe he'd offer the Paladin a deal where he'd give them back a limited amount of autonomy. But in exchange, they have to basically build fighters and drones for the Lyran fleet to use.
Sorry, I'm looking. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong file, because I'm looking at the complete Imperial data file of GURPS 4th edition Romulans.
Yeah, that's the one. If you look near the back, there's a section for the quote unquote suppressed species, and one of them is the Gerlunians.
Okay. Okay, I'm getting to it actually. Okay, I'm still missing it. Okay, well, I don't want to spend too much time looking, trying to find this.
Or you could do a Control F and just type in GERLUN. IANF, that should be enough.
Oh, brilliance. Okay, yeah, they're not allowed to leave their home world. Okay. The first three were humanoids, something like the reptilian and bizarre Dions. Captain discovers very quiet. It wasn't until that captured computer records that the Federation are aware of these new species. Yeah, we call them the suppressed races. where they go to the book and Eye's world. Just make its first halting at the step towards planetary unity. And the most advanced nations have achieved early TL-8 technology, primary in military and industrial equipment, consumer goods, medicine, and other areas lagged at least one or two tech levels. For the Romulan, the Guerrilla was something of a novelty, being one of the few planets found in Romulan space that have a recognizable sentient culture. Although backward technologies comparison to the Romulans, the Guerrillians were obviously intelligent. Covert study of their culture revealed a warrior species that would fiercely defend their homeworld from a direct invasion, even with relative primitive technology. The Romulans could simply bombard the planet from orbit, but doing so would damage resources and complicate proper economic exploitation. Moreover, there was no real reason to attack the Guerrilla at all, as there are 100 of other planets just like it, but without a native population. Super Team recommended the planet be studied in secret, looking for weaknesses to exploit until such time as the decision was made to invade, ignore, or deal with the Guerrillians. Okay, it keeps going. I'm about to talk about the culture of the Guerrillian. Yeah, that'd be interesting. The way they're pictured. Let me bring that up real quick so people can see what the picture is in GURPS. There, it looks like the build is a little bit smaller than a Gorn, but still very muscular. Oh boy.
Well, part of the thing as well is that in the historical timeline, the Romulans find them relatively late, so they don't have as much time to figure out what they're going to do with them. But in this timeline, because the Romulans have warp early, they uncover the planet a few decades ahead of time. So they actually have more of an opportunity to figure out what they're going to do and how they're going to make first contact and incorporate mm-hmm. them.
But anyway, yeah, seeing here's the Guerrillians. Sorry, I keep distracted. My cats are playing with stuff. Anyway, yep. Okay. Going through the whole history and background material of the other race. So apologize, sorry about the oops. Huh. Okay, you can still hear. Cool. Anyway, like that. Okay. Apologize. That for a moment, OBS is not working the way it should. Anyhow, actually, well, I think we need to wrap up because I need to wake up bright and early and drive 3 hours down to drop off my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law's husband, which is not my brother-in-law. My brother-in-law would be one of my wife's brothers. So. Anyhow.
Oh, yeah.
Gary, it was a pleasure to have you around and brought up an interesting topic. And you have a good night.
Thank you. And of course, if anyone has their own thoughts about the Reflection Universe and what kind of interesting quirks might be involved, pop over to the BBS and add your thoughts there.
Great. Okay, see you. Doug, glad to see that you showed up. Getting concerned there in a moment.
Sorry.
Thought you might have overslept.
Nah, it's just distracted with some other stuff. That's basically it.
Understood.
Nothing to really talk about here. But Gamers of Summer coming up. Yay! We're like, what, just a couple months away now.
I know. I want to get some things together when it comes to miniatures. And after I buy them, I have to paint them. Because I want to get something nice and pretty for people to play with.
Could sit down here and have a painting weekend if you want. Just bring all the paints.
Understood. Well, that's one thing I have to do. I have to buy both the miniatures and the paints. Because I did have paints. Well, this moment, it's way too long ago. When I started going to Origins, that's when I bought some miniatures, and I did some, you know, just I painted the Klingon cruiser and the Federation cruiser. The idea was to have a demo with those two, the nice visual factor and so forth. But, you know, that's all. I bought the paints, but I never painted again after that. If I kept those paints, it would have been dried out by now.
I remember those. I remember seeing you use them in the breezeway.
Yep. I remember putting those demos in the breezeway. That breezeway was warm. Anyhow. Doug, you have a good night.
You too. Feel free to give me a holler and stop by if your long ass drive takes you by here. Have a good one. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, bye. So, had a nice little discussion about alternate Romulan history, which is the one that Gary brought up. I think is one of the more interesting ones. Actually, I think it's one of the more lengthy discussions of the possible alternate timelines to the Romulans. Because I know David Beek actually goes into some other alternate history where they're saying basically it didn't change all that much. In the end, overall, it didn't change the history of Romulans, and it didn't change the history of the general war significantly anyway. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.